Welcome to episode 50 of the Fredcast for the week of January 7th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Happy New Year and welcome to the 50th episode of the Fredcast. Yes, it's our golden anniversary. In the news this week, Ned Overend does it again. The UCI's Pat McQuaid sticks his foot in his mouth. The Pro Tour team roster is out, and bicycle jetpack anyone? Following the news, an interview with Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, a review of PC cycling logbook software, an upcoming ride, some shoutouts, and Podsafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike camera just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. The Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. Every week, I'll be choosing some of Cambria's best products and placing them on a special Fred's Picks page. Check it out by going to www.thefredcast.com and click on the Fred's Picks link on the left-hand side of the page. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Well, welcome back once again to the Fredcast. Happy New Year. I hope everyone's holidays were great. And I wish all of you a happy and healthy and prosperous 2007. Well, as you can tell, a couple of new things on the Fredcast tonight. Number one, our new sponsor, Cambria Bicycle Outfitter. I'll be telling you a little bit about them a little bit later as we interview Steve Fleury, the president of the company. Also, this is episode 50. Woohoo! I'm really excited about that. 50 episodes of the Fredcast. And quite frankly, I owe all of it to you. So thanks for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. And I'm looking for 50. Nah, forget it. 500 more. The Fredcast rolls on. So let's get right into the news for episode 50 of the Fredcast. Well, as you know, it's been a while since we've been together. So there's been some news that's taken place over the last couple of weeks while we've been gone. And one of them, and this just makes me really excited, is that Ned Overend won a U.S. National Cyclocross Championship while we were gone. Now, if you're not familiar with the name Ned Overend, that's okay. Let me tell you some of his credentials. Ned was the 1986, 1987, 1989, 1990, 1991, and 1992 Norman National Mountain Bike Champion. In 1990, he was the UCI Mountain Bike World Champion. He has the 1998 and 1999 Xterra World Championship under his belt, the 2000 National Winter Triathlon Championship, the 2001 and 2002 U.S. National Xterra Series Championship. In 2004, he was the Colorado Road Champion. In 2004, he was also the Road Apple Rally Champion. In 2005, he took fourth in the grueling Mount Washington Hill Climb. Also in 2005, he took fifth in the Norman National Championships. And as you know, last year, he took second in the 2006 Mount Washington Hill Climb. This year, Ned wins the 2006 California Giant Berry Farms USA Cycling National Cyclocross Championships in the men's 50-54 race. According to Ned, at the end, he was quoted as saying, quote, "I'm not totally sure of my cyclocross skills, especially my mounts and my dismounts. I have to tell you, there is no doubt that I personally am pretty sure of Ned's cyclocross skills. Ned is a cycling machine. He has been riding for years and years, and it looks like he's going to ride for many years to come. So congratulations, Ned, on your victory. I can't wait to see what category you're going to go after next. Track anyone?" And while it may be a new year, unfortunately, doping is still with us. If it was your New Year's wish that doping would be gone from professional cycling and I wouldn't have to talk about it anymore here on the Fredcast, I'm very sorry to disappoint you in only the second story of the first Fredcast of the year. You see, UCI President Pat McQuaid recently gave an interview. And you remember that McQuaid is really knee-deep in this whole doping situation that's going on in cycling, and he's really trying to battle the forces of evil, trying to get doping out of professional cycling. Well, in my personal opinion, in this interview, McQuaid put his foot in his mouth. Why don't you hear it in his own words? Here's Pat McQuaid in the interview.
There is a clash going on at the moment between two cultures, the Anglo-Saxon culture and what I might call the mafia Western European culture. The Western European culture is a culture which has, to some extent, I won't say condone doping or condone cheating practices, but because of their culture in life, because of the way they deal with everything else in life, they accept certain practices. The Anglo-Saxon, which would be here, it would be Germany, it would be the UK, it would be Denmark, is the complete opposite. And they have a completely different approach to the doping fight. And it's evident in when you see the approach that teams have made, the German teams in particular, who had a major problem in July, and the approach that they've taken to looking at the future and how they move forward into the future. And it's important, I feel, it's very important that at the end of the day, the Anglo-Saxon approach wins out. Because if it doesn't, then the sport is doomed.
Okay, so let's parse this and see if we can figure out what he was trying to say before we get to what he actually said. It seems to me that what McQuaid was trying to say is that we need to look at the examples being set by teams like T-Mobile, who are taking a very proactive stance against doping and trying to make sure that their riders are riding clean. I think that's true. I think that we do want all of the Pro Tour teams and everybody in professional sport, forget cycling, but all sports, to take a proactive stance against doping and make sure that people are playing clean, whatever sport it is. But it's quite obvious where he, as I said, stuck his foot in his mouth. What is this talk about countries that are mafia-like? And how some countries accept, they don't condone, but they accept things because of the way their culture is? I mean, he talked about how countries were mafia-like and how they accept cheating and doping because of their culture? I'm sorry, Pat, but this isn't a cultural clash. This is all about ethics and morals. And disparaging the Spanish and the Italians, which is what it sounds to everybody like he's doing, disparaging them isn't exactly going to help the cause and isn't exactly making you seem like the ethical leader of the UCI. No, instead, it's making you seem like a bigot. Is that really the image that the leader of the UCI wants to portray? Because at least in my opinion, that's the way it seems. Now, I would like to think that this isn't exactly the way that Pat McQuaid thinks. I'd like to see a retraction or at least a statement from the UCI, you know, in the political words, clarifying the statement. But until then, a statement like this doesn't seem to me to be a great way to start off the year, a year that you want to be a clean year in cycling, and it doesn't seem to me to be the best way to ensure job security for Mr. Pat McQuaid. And so speaking of the UCI and, of course, the Pro Tour, which is the focus of professional cycling in the year, while we were gone, the UCI released the Pro Tour team list for 2007, and There also is a clarification of one team in here, and that is, you'll recall we were talking about Team Astana and whether or not they were going to be allowed to race in 2007. Well, according to the UCI quote, the required documents having been produced within the given deadline, the UCI License Commission has awarded the Astana team a UCI Pro Tour license for a 4-year period from January 1st, 2007 through December 31st, 2010. So here are the official teams of the 2007 UCI Pro Tour. Predictor Lotto from Belgium, Quickstep from Belgium, Unibet, Belgium, Team CSC from Denmark, Cost Epargnier from Spain, Euskaltel from Spain, Saunier Duval from Spain, AG2R from France, Bouygues Telecom from France, Cofidis from France, Credit Agricole from France, Française du Jeu from France, Gerold Steiner from Germany, T-Mobile from Germany, Lamprey Fondital from Italy, Liquigas from Italy, Team Milrom from Italy, Rabobank from the Netherlands, Astana with a Swiss license, and from the United States of America, rounding out the Pro Tour teams for 2007, the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team. And that is going to be who you will see in all of the major races in 2007. We wish all of the racers good luck. Interestingly enough, at the end of the statement issuing the Pro Tour team list is this wording: the UCI wishes to take this opportunity to formally state that all teams with a UCI Pro Tour license will have the right and obligation to take part in 27 races on the 2007 UCI Pro Tour calendar. And then they insert this: in this respect, the recent statements made by ASO, RCS, and Unipublic, those are the organizers of the Grand Tours, folks, should be considered as totally unfounded as far as the rules are concerned. We've been through this plenty of times before here on the Fredcast. There's a long-standing dispute between the UCI and the organizers of Grand Tours, again, ASO, RCS, and Unipublic, over not only the Pro Tour calendar, but also the list of teams that are allowed to participate in the Grand Tours. And this feud is heating up. We talked about it on one of the last shows, and we still aren't sure what's going to happen this year with the Grand Tours and with the races that they organize. So obviously the Grand Tours have thrown down the gauntlet. The UCI, by this statement, is also throwing down the gauntlet. I think that there's going to be many statements and many salvos back and forth before this is ever settled. Hopefully it will be settled before the season starts in just a couple of months. And so from the Pro Tour to the teams to the racers, and the first racer we'll start with tonight, Jan Ullrich. You'll recall that Jan Ullrich was not allowed to race in the 2006 Tour de France. He was banned because he was linked, allegedly, to the Operación Puerto doping scandal in Spain. However, as we've talked about before, the Spanish authorities will not release the evidence in the Puerto case until it's adjudicated through the Spanish courts. As a result, there's licensing bodies all over the world that are unable to proceed against any of the riders that were potentially implicated in the Puerto affair, and this includes Jan Ullrich. Now, Jan Ullrich is German by nationality, but because he lives in Switzerland, he races under a Swiss license, and Swiss cycling authorities have now halted their investigation into Jan Ullrich until and unless they're able to get some of that evidence from the Spanish authorities. According to the director of Switzerland's Cycling Federation, Lorenz Schaffli, quote, "I find it very trying. I think the whole procedure was done badly from the beginning in Spain, but it's not finished. This doesn't mean that we can't open new proceedings. If there's something else, it's clear that we can reopen the proceedings afterwards." So the question is, does this or does this not allow Ullrich to return to professional racing? Well, there is a gentleman's agreement among the Pro Tour teams saying that they will not hire any cyclist for their teams for the 2007 season if that cyclist is still under investigation. So it seems fairly clear that the Swiss, although they've halted their investigation, they still have Jan Ullrich's case open. So it would seem, at least on the face, that the Pro Tour teams probably will not be looking at Jan Ullrich for the 2007 season. However, there is now a story that an Italian team called Acqua and Sapone is now looking at Jan Ullrich as a potential rider for their team. This is a so-called continental team. This is not a Pro Tour team. So the only way that Jan Ullrich, if he goes with this team, might be able to race in one of the Grand Tours is if, as I mentioned previously, the Grand Tours decide to break with the Pro Tour and decide to invite some teams and some riders on their own. So far, Ullrich has not signed with any of these teams. There has not been a comment from the Ullrich camp. So right now, this is just speculation. So it's only a possibility that he might actually be racing again, although there have been rumors that he may hang it up entirely because of the doping allegations. Not sure what's going to happen. We'll have to see. And from one writer in the middle of a doping scandal to another, let's talk a little bit about Floyd Landis for a moment. Dick Pound was recently quoted in the New York Times as saying some really awful things about Floyd Landis. If you don't recall who Dick Pound is, he's the chairman of WADA, or the World Anti-Doping Agency, and he's been known to say some pretty wild things in the past. You may recall his famous Nazi frogmen comment of some time ago. Well, apparently, Dick Pound was quoted in the New York Times as saying the following things. Quote, he was, and by the way, this is speaking of Landis's amazing stage win in the 2006 Tour de France. He said, quote, he was 11 minutes behind or something, and all of a sudden, there's this Herculean effort where he's going up mountains like he's on a goddamn Harley. Then he says, it's a great story, wonderful, but if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. And then talking about the test results where there was an 11-to-1 testosterone ratio, allegedly, in Floyd's sample, quote, I mean, it was 11-to-1. You'd think he'd be violating every virgin with 100 miles. How does he even get on his bicycle? Okay, so let's stop there for a second before I even tell you what Floyd had to say. Have all the higher-ups in professional cycling and in the anti-doping world just completely lost it? Was there just too much champagne at the New Year's Eve party? First, we have Pat McQuaid calling everybody who's not a, quote, Anglo-Saxon, mafia-like. And now we've got Dick Pound just going off in a pretty vulgar way about Floyd Landis and about the alleged results of his drug tests. I just think it's incredible. What the heck is going on? Okay, so what did Floyd Landis do? Well, Floyd Landis wrote an open letter to the community. It was published in the New York Times. And sorry, I think that this was just a bit more classy than what Dick Pound had to say. It went on to say, quote, Dick Pound's recent defamatory and absurd public comments in the midst of a process where the highest ethical standards should support a fair and just outcome highlight the dramatic and systematic problems with global anti-doping enforcement and adjudication. He went on to say, quote, Mr. Pound's published reference to the testosterone in my system proves he has not even bothered to review the facts regarding the unsubstantiated allegations against me. Continuing, quote, my testosterone levels were tested as normal following stage 17 of the 2006 Tour de France, and this fact is clear to anyone who cares to review the lab data. Absolute testosterone levels are not even part of the allegations. The lab in question tested a clearly contaminated sample of my urine against WADA rules, and even then my testosterone levels fell into the normal to low range. Mr. Pound should conduct himself in a manner more consistent with the seriousness of the unsubstantiated allegations against me and the damage they have caused to a great number of people. You know what, Floyd? You are absolutely right. Whether or not you are finally found guilty, the fact of the matter is that for Dick Pound to go off like he did about you in this way, in such a vulgar way, in such a non-professional way, I think was wrong. One man's opinion, but I think it was wrong. Now, of course, Floyd and his supporters are not just sitting back and hoping that letters to the New York Times are going to help Floyd out of the current fix that he's in. Instead, there is now a new site on the internet at www.floydfairnessfund.org. This is a site that was launched to help raise some $2 million to cover the legal and other fees and expenses in connection with Floyd's defense. According to Floyd's representative, Michael Henson, quote, despite their lack of adherence to individual rights and due process, the sports bureaucracies pursuing Floyd are funded in large part by multi-million dollar grants of U.S. taxpayer dollars and have financial and human resources that far outstrip those of even a professional athlete of Floyd's accomplishments. So if you're interested in taking a look at this, positive or negative, whether you're in Floyd's camp or not, I think you'll find it interesting, and I have put a link in the show notes. Now, another thing that's interesting that happened in the Floyd Landis case recently, well, It's not connected to Floyd, but it certainly has something to do with his case. You'll recall recently that I commented that it has been almost unheard of for somebody in a case like Floyd's to actually be able to win their case and get off based on the kind of technicalities that Floyd is hanging his hat on. Well, the Court of Arbitration of Sport recently rejected a final appeal by the UCI to sanction a rider named Inigo Landaluz for a positive testosterone case, citing, you're going to love this, quote, malfeasance by the same lab that handled Floyd Landis's both A and B samples. Now, Inigo Landaluz won the 2005 Dauphiné Libéré. He was on the Euskaltel team. And then he was suspended for urine tests that were taken at that race that showed abnormally high testosterone levels. In this case, it was established, according to the Court of Arbitration for Sport's press release, quote, it has been established that the person who conducted the analysis of the B sample was also involved in the analysis of the A sample, thus in violation of the international standard applicable to the accredited laboratories. In other words, they broke the rules in the way that they handled Landaluz's samples. And that is exactly what Floyd is alleging against the exact same lab, that they didn't follow the UCI and WADA rules when it came to the proper processing of his samples. Floyd is now hoping that if Landaluz was able to get off on this rules violation by the lab, that he may have a chance of getting off in the same way. Wouldn't that be interesting? Well, for those of you that are in the UK and you enjoy mountain biking, our friends over at bikebiz.com are announcing that Specialized and Giant have teamed up for a mountain bike series in the United Kingdom. According to the bikebiz.com news article, 6 mountain bike events are going to be staged across the United Kingdom from April through June. Now, in addition to the races, there's going to be demo ride opportunities from both Specialized and Giant. Giant's On Dirt demo at the Mountain Mayhem 24-hour event will be one of the events in the Specialized Challenge series. And Specialized has partnered with Giant, SRAM, Maguro, and the Forestry Commission. And the media partners are MBR and Single Track Mag, who is the media partner for Mountain Mayhem. The 6 events are going to be April 1st in Dumfries, April 22nd in Grisdale, April 28th and 29th in Caton Hall, Staffordshire, May 12th through the 13th in, I'm sorry, folks, the Gwydir Forest. I'm sure Carlton's going to kill me for saying that one wrong. In Snowdonia, June 3rd, Staunton County Park in Hants, and June 22nd through the 24th is the Mountain Mayhem 24th in Ledbury. All of those should be great events. Go out and enjoy. You know, from time to time here on the Fredcast, I have to bring you the unfortunate news of various cyclists who were killed on the roads. And we talk all the time about safety and about my feelings about just riding around here in Southern California and how dangerous it can be. Now imagine riding in New York City, one of the most populous cities, one of the most densely populated cities in the entire world. Well, last year, unfortunately, 14 cyclists were killed on the streets of New York. And as a tribute to those 14 cyclists, there was recently a ride through the city to remember them and to commemorate their deaths in the hopes of raising awareness among cyclists, pedestrians, the general community, and especially among motorists. Hundreds of riders took part in the ride. They went through Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx, and each place where a cyclist was killed, they stopped. There was a bicycle that was painted white. It was a so-called ghost bicycle. Many of them were decorated with flowers and with inspirational passages about the riders who died and informational notices about the riders who died there. And when they stopped for a moment of silence. According to the organizer, quote, people aren't careful enough. People don't obey the rules that are there, and we need better designs. We need things that would turn this city into a greener, safer place. And I would have to say amen to that. And that goes for any major city anywhere in the world. We need more awareness that we're out there on two wheels and that we are not as well protected as the people in their cars. And so commemorations like this can only help raise awareness. And for those of you who took part in it, I say thank you on behalf of the cycling community in general for helping to raise that awareness that we're there and that it's dangerous out there for us. And finally tonight, I saw an article online that I just had to tell you about. It concerns a new product called the Thrust Pack. And I've put links in the show notes to both the news article and the Thrust Pack website. And this is something that you really have to, basically you have to see for yourself. It is a backpack device that includes a motor and a very large fan. And it works almost like a jetpack for you while you're riding your bike. You control it with your finger and literally sit on your bike, turn this thing on, and it propels you down the road or wherever it is that you're riding. Now, according to the inventor, you can get about 150 miles to the gallon. Of course, that makes it pretty darn fuel efficient. And I don't exactly know what the price is. I've emailed the inventor to find out a little bit more about it. But in the meantime, go ahead and check it out on the web. I think you'll find this very interesting. It's at www.thrustpack.com. I'm not quite sure whether or not the UCI would sanction this in one of their races. But you never know. I mean, it doesn't look mafia-like to me. And that's going to do it for the news for episode 50 of the Fredcast. Well, before we get to the features tonight, I have just a program note for you. You may recall about a month ago we did a live broadcast, and we're doing another one. This one will be this Wednesday, January the 10th. We'll be doing it at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's 0200 GMT. We're going to be doing it again live via TalkShoe. There's a link in the show notes, as well as a link on thefredcast.com. Let me just tell you briefly how this works. Now, you can listen live at TalkShoe while we're on the air. You don't need to download any software to listen. All you need to know is the show ID, and that's 12496. Don't worry if you didn't write that down. It's in the show notes. Now, besides just listening live, if you download the TalkShoe client, not only can you listen, but you can also chat with other listeners online while the show is on the air. This is great. If you listened to the recorded version of the live show, you could tell that I was responding to what listeners were typing into the chat room. So that enabled them to ask questions, and it also enabled them to, you know, try to make me laugh while I was on the air. But it's very similar to instant messaging or ICQ or any other chat room you've ever been in. And the great thing is I will be able to see what you're saying while I'm on the air. Now, I'd also like you to please call into the show and ask your questions. Our guest, again, this time, will be Graham Street from CycloCore.com. We had a great response to Graham's having been on the show last time. And so I asked Graham to come back. And this time, instead of talking about his products, I thought maybe we might get a little bit of freebie from Graham in that I've asked him to talk to us about nutrition. Because one of the challenges that I face, and I'm sure a lot of you face in the off season, is making sure that you eat right so that, unlike those jerseys and the things you see in the magazines, you don't become the quote old guys who get fat in wintertime. So I think nutrition is very important all year round, but personally, I think it's very important, especially in the off season. So Graham's going to come on, he's going to take some questions from me, and I'm hoping he's going to take questions from you. So here's how you call in. First, go right now to TalkShoe.com, sign up for a TalkShoe account, it's free, and then pick a PIN number. Once you have that, you can then call into the show at area code 724-444-7444. Once you're online, they'll ask you for your PIN number, they'll ask you for the show ID. Again, those numbers, that number is in the show notes and on thefredcast.com. And then it'll show me that you want to ask a question. And when we get to it, I'll bring you on the show and you'll be able to be chatting live on the air with me and with Graham And of course, you'll be on the podcast when it's released as a recorded show. Now, if for some reason you are not able to join us live, like for instance, you want to listen to President Bush's speech that night, which is at the same time, coincidentally, no problem. You'll be able to listen to the show recorded in episode 51 next week of the Fredcast. So again, we're going to be having Graham Street from CycleCore.com. We're going to be talking about nutrition, and I think it's going to be a great show and a great opportunity for you to get your questions answered. Check the show notes, check the website, and make sure that you check in with us on TalkShoe on Wednesday night. Well, coming up in a little while, I'm going to have a review of a great new logbook software for your PC. Yes, folks, it's not a Macintosh program. It's a PC program I'm reviewing. But before we do that, I want to bring you an interview that I did with Steve Fleury, who's the president of Cambria Bicycle Outfitter. As you heard at the top of the show, Cambria has signed on as the sponsor of the Fredcast. We're very happy to have them on board with us and very appreciative of what they're doing for the show. It's going to enable us to do some new things with the show coming up, give us some opportunities to expand some of the things that we're offering to you as the listener. And so I thought that it might be useful because maybe you haven't heard of Cambria, maybe you've never used Cambria Bicycle Outfitter before. I thought it might be useful for you to hear a little bit about them. This isn't intended to be something, you know, of a commercial or something that we're going to do often, but I thought that we might give Steve an opportunity to come on and tell us a little bit about the company, because I think it's a company that all of you Fredcast listeners, if you don't know about it, you should. So here's the interview that I did with Steve Fleury, president of Cambria Bicycle Outfitter. Steve, just if you would, tell me a little bit about the history of the company. I know it's your anniversary, so I'm sure that history is on everybody's mind.
Yeah, actually, Cambria Bicycle Outfitter was started in 1986. It was one of the first bicycle mail orders to be started. Started with a little ad, I believe, in MBA. We still advertise, obviously, in MBA, and have had long-term relationships, what we believe long-term relationships with most, I think our claim to fame would be American-made suppliers. We have, over the years, done our best to support American-made products. As you probably know, it gets more difficult as time goes on to find products exclusively manufactured in the United States. But lines like Santa Cruz and Ellsworth, I would say Ventana, we still support Yeti. Parts of those lines are now made overseas, but in most of them, the majority is still made in the United States, I believe. So, and a lot of small lines. I mean, people who have been around a while will remember KUKA, cranks, AC products. We were great supporters of them and have continued to do the best to support those kinds of products as we go. And we also try to be very supportive in the latest and greatest category, what I call, we'll always try to do our best to stock the cutting edge latest products. And the flip side of that is, we maybe have the best inventory of outdated products, I guess you would call them, older products. We carry a lot of parts for older products. We'll do our best for customers to find parts for those products if they want to keep them in the running condition. Those are things that we do. We do it through our phone sales. We have some great phone sales tech guys that have been around for years and years and years who know parts probably as good as anybody in the industry. So when people call, they can really get some knowledgeable people on the phone to help them. And that's also one of the things that we have strived to maintain in this web-based era.
Now, of course, when you started 20 years ago, you know, the web wasn't even something anybody was talking about, perhaps outside of the government maybe. How was that transition from mail order to the web? Was it something that was difficult for you? Have you found that it's been a real success for you?
Well, yes, it has been a very big success. And was it difficult? I guess my base answer would be no. It was transitional. In 1998 or so, I'm going to say, I came on board the company in 2000 and have been here since then. But I believe it was late 1998 that the company started taking orders through email and had a website and could do email orders. It was around 2000 when we went to a little bit more automated system. And since then, we have continually technically updated our system to provide better service and better ability for the customers to see what's on and better information. It was really about 2003, I would say, that the transition in the industry started to be made from phone/mail order sales to internet web sales. I would venture to say that many companies now who are internet-based web companies like us, do the majority of their sales through that medium as opposed to catalog sales. There's a few, still obviously, a few big catalogers out there, but the majority of the people our size, let's say, are doing mainly, I would say, web orders, just like we are. And the web and the phone has become much more of a technical/customer service based vehicle than a sales vehicle.
Now we talked. You mentioned before about the telephone guys, the sort of technical guys. What do you find that they're there for? And you talked about the you know, finding these older parts and some of these legacy items. Are they really just there for special requests? How does that work?
One of the things the web has brought to the average consumer is the ability to gather information and process information in an amazing way that never existed in the history of the world before. I mean, you know, to go in and Google or Yahoo or whatever search engine you use a particular part or something to find out information on it or even a company or whatever, and you're listeners will absolutely know this. It's just amazing what you can find out. However, sometimes you've got, let me say, a 2001 bike, pick your brand, and you want to change disc brakes on it. Well, sometimes it's hard to find the true technical information and know exactly what you need. There's a lot of different little connections that maybe need to be made. You know, how long a hose length do you need? What size rotor do you really want? What bolt configuration do you need, a special adapter for that model? If you call the phone guys, they're going to go, oh, hook you up. Here's what you need. You need this, this, and this, and this. That's the knowledge they bring because they do this day in and day out, and they know bike parts exceptionally well. And if one guy gets stumped in a question, he can just turn to somebody else and say, what do you know about this? Boom, and get information back to the customer immediately. And sometimes the customer just goes, thanks, I'll order it on the web. And sometimes they say, okay, let me place the order right now. It really is immaterial for us. It's the customer service aspect of getting the customer what he wants is really an important thing. And sometimes the phones are actually handier than the web to do that.
So just two more questions for you because, you know, we don't want to turn this into a huge thing, but two questions. Number one, for the listeners that are maybe not in the Western United States or maybe aren't even in the United States at all, why Cambria? What's the word Cambria mean? I know, but perhaps the listeners don't know.
You mean the city of Cambria, where we are? We're on the central coast of California in a very small little community. It's about 4,000 people. That's where it originally started. Our warehouse is actually located about 26 miles away from Cambria now, but it's still our headquarters. It's a great little tourist town. People come from all over the world to visit. We get bike riders from literally all over the world that will stop into the store and just to see Cambria because they've seen it, they've bought something from it, they're aware of it. We do have an international reputation, and we do a very significant business outside of this country with lines that will allow us to do that.
That's great. And finally, in just a couple of sentences, what would you say sets Cambria apart from some of your competition that's out there?
we'd like to think the knowledge of our staff, our average staff has been with us over 6 years. We think that's pretty extraordinary in the bicycle business where there's so much movement. I have people that have worked for Cambria for 15 years, phone guys that have worked for 8 years, 9 years on the phones, doing other things, but basically on the phones. So our customer service, we really want to make the customer happy. I mean, I just don't know how else to say it. Well, let me put it the bottom line. Without the customer, we're not in business. So it behooves us to make the customer happy. And I will be upfront and honest because that's what Cambria is. We don't do it 100% of the time. I don't think any company does, but we damn well try.
That's great. And like you said, without the customer, you wouldn't have a business. I have to say thank you to you because without Cambria, we wouldn't have a sponsor. And I want to thank you for coming on board as a sponsor of the Fredcast and let the listeners know that they can find Cambria Bike really easily just by going to www.thefredcast.com. And right there on the left-hand side of the page, there are two links now. One will take them right to your website, but the other one, says Fred's Picks, and every week I'm going to be picking out some products that I think that the listeners would be interested in, and if they click the Fred's Picks links, they will go right to your website, and they'll get to see those products that I've chosen for the week. Steve, thanks again for the sponsorship. Thanks for your time this evening, and hopefully our listeners have learned a little bit, not just about Cambria, but a little bit about the way that web sales and phone sales work for bikes and bike products. Thanks again.
Thanks, David.
Well, moving on from the interview with Steve, I'd like to talk to you about a product that I've been trying recently, and it was recommended to me by a Fredcast listener. The product is called SportTrax, and it's an exercise logbook software for your Windows PC. Okay, you can now pick yourselves all up off the floor because I'm talking about a PC product instead of a Mac product. Everybody ready? Okay, let's go forward. SportTrax is what I think Garmin's training center software should be. So let me explain. For me, I want the ability to be able to, in one place, keep track of every single ride that I do. I want to be able to know how it's affected my heart rate, how it has affected the amount of calories that I've burned in a particular day or a particular week or any custom time period that I want to look at. I want to be able to take my GPS data or my heart rate data and automatically have that entered into logbook software. Because if there's one thing that I hate, it's coming back from a ride and having to start keying all of this information into my computer when I've got the data gathering devices on my wrist or on my handlebars. So a listener mentioned to me that I should check out SportTrax, and of course, I have a link in the show notes. And I have been extremely impressed. Let me tell you a little bit about it. First of all, it is truly a multi-sport logbook software so that it's already set up for you to track your running activities, your swimming activities, your cycling activities, you triathletes, are you hearing something here? And then, of course, there's an other category. So for those of us that are into active sports, and for those of you that are out there that are Freds that are also triathletes, this is the perfect software for you. And maybe you like to go hiking or do other things with your heart rate monitor or with your GPS. There's still room for you to track those activities in this SportTrax logbook software. One of the great things about it, and one of the reasons that I love using a GPS, is that I always like to be able to go back and look at the map of my route. Now, one of the problems that some of the GPS software out there has, specifically the Garmin GPS software, and I mention the Garmin because they really are the only company so far that has a cycling-specific GPS unit, or even a running-specific GPS unit, either in the Edge or Forerunner products. So I mentioned their software because they're the ones that are really at the forefront in this category. One of the problems with the Garmin software is if you don't have any of their other products, any of their outdoors products or their marine products or their auto navigation products, you don't have their maps loaded onto your computer. So that while you do get the mapping capabilities on your screen, really it's a line out in space and you're not looking at it on a street map or on an aerial map. The great thing about SportTrack is that it uses things like Google Maps so that you can look at your route on a topo map, you can look at it on a street map, an aerial map. It really is fantastic so that you can look at it in that way. It's extremely easy to navigate this software. And again, one of the problems that I've had with logbook software in the past is the fact that it's been difficult to find what days I did an activity. So that, for instance, when you look at the monthly calendar in SportTrack, there's a little square around the days when you did activities. And if you click on that little square, it opens up a daily summary. Your daily summary shows your distance, your time, your pace, the number of calories burned, your ascent, your descent, the amount of time you were stopped, and your fastest speed. And there's also a weekly calendar that shows every activity in brief so you can look at a summary of a particular week. Now, another great thing about this software is that it can instantly import from a variety of electronic gizmos, if you will. Now, almost every Garmin GPS that you might consider using for any of the activities we've mentioned is listed. So there's the Edge 205 and 305, almost the entire Forerunner series. The Fortrex series, the Gecko, the eTrex Legend, Legend C, Legend CX, Vista C, the GPS Map 60 CS, and the GPS Map 76. In addition, if you have a Timex body link, it also automatically will upload into the SportTrack software. What about those of you with Polar heart rate monitors? Well, Polar creates a heart rate monitor file on your computer that can be imported directly into this software, as well as the Timex trainer files, so you can get your Timex heart rate monitor files. And if you're a runner and you use RunLog 5.0, that data can also be imported into the SportTrack software. And I would probably venture to guess that future devices are going to be added real soon. Another thing that I also like from one of these pieces of software is the ability to export the data in a format that can be used by others. This software will do it. It will output it into the GPX format, which most people who are really into GPS know how to use and know how to get into their GPSs. It'll output into Google Earth so you can actually fly through your route, or if your buddy did a great ride and sends you the route that he or she did, you could then put that into your Google Earth file, and then you would be able to fly through it in Google Earth and get a preview of that ride. You can also get an image. In other words, you can print out an image or a photo, a picture of your ride, or you can print out a route sheet. Really great software. And for those of you who do have Macs, if you want to be able to run this software, you can do it. I was able to run it using the VMware Fusion product, and it ran really, really well. So I've looked at a lot of logbook software out there, and I probably have talked to you about some of it before, but of all of the logbook software that I've tried, there's no doubt in my mind that this SportTrack software is the best one that I've seen and one that I would definitely recommend to you. Go ahead and check it out in the show notes, see what you think, and let me know if you like it. Now, for those of you that are on a Mac, just an announcement for you and something that we've talked about before. I'm recording this on Monday, January the 7th. Tomorrow, Tuesday, January the 8th, is the day that Macworld will open its doors. And that's the day that Garmin has said that they will release their training center software for us Mac users. I have my sources that are getting me discs and will be providing me with a sample of the software to test. I will be sure to be back here next week and let you know my impressions of it. But if there are some of you Fredcast listeners out there that are not able to get to the Macworld Expo. One or two of my sources have promised to try to grab as many discs as possible. And of course, they're going to ask the Garmin people if they can do this. But if they are able to get these discs, I would be happy to figure out a way to get you one. And it's going to be first come, first serve. So if you're interested in getting one of these discs, send an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. And in your subject line, please say Mac Garmin software. So thefredcast@gmail.com, and in your subject line, Mac Garmin software, give me your complete mailing address information, and first come, first serve, I will get discs out to as many people as I can. Before I get to my upcoming ride this week, I wanted to make another request for some emails. One of the problems that I have found online is that it is oftentimes difficult to find upcoming rides, great upcoming rides. Now, there's a great calendar out here on the West Coast called the Western States Ride Calendar. I've told you about it before. It is a great place to find organized rides on the West Coast, but I just don't want to talk about West Coast rides. Matter of fact, I don't want to only talk about U.S. rides. I want to talk about rides around the world, so I need your help. Please send your suggestions for my upcoming rides to my email, again, to thefredcast@gmail.com. And in your subject line for that, say upcoming rides. And please give me as much information about an upcoming ride as possible. Or if you've just got a website link, go ahead and put that in your email. I want to try to feature as many rides as possible, but I need your help to do that. So please send that information to me as soon as you can. Speaking of that, I'm going to tell you about a ride today that was suggested by a Fredcast listener, this time a Fredcast listener in Australia. And this is the Metabank Great Carry Ride, which is going to take place on the weekend of March 4th in the southwest of Western Australia. This is a 105-kilometer trail ride between the towns of Pemberton and Northcliffe. And this is raising money for, believe it or not, one of my favorite causes, the Royal Flying Doctors Service in Western Australia. If you're not familiar with the Royal Flying Doctors, it is an excellent cause. You see, take a look at a map of Australia. Australia is huge, and there are a lot of cities and towns that are very far from really high-quality hospitals and medical facilities. And so if someone gets ill or needs medical attention, say in the outback, the Royal Flying Doctors go pick them up and bring them to medical facilities. I had the great opportunity to tour a RFDS base in far north Queensland. I got a chance to take a look at some of their aircraft. Being a private pilot, I loved it. And I think I wore my Royal Flying Doctors t-shirt until it absolutely wore out. This is a great cause. It sounds like a great ride. So if you are in southwestern Australia the weekend of the 4th of March, go ahead and check it out. And of course, I've put a link in the show notes. Okay, a couple of notes that I got from some of the Fredcast listeners. But before I get to that, I just wanted to also mention there was a great article in the Los Angeles Times today, Monday, January 7th, on custom bicycles. Some of the information in there was a bit basic because I think it was for a fairly basic audience, but it's a pretty interesting article nonetheless, and I have put a link in the show notes to that. So click onto thefredcast.com and go ahead and check out the show notes. I think you'll find that interesting. Next up is a tip that I got from listener Andy, and Andy wanted to mention something that was related to one of the recent best of shows. Remember, we were talking about how to prepare for your first century, and one of the things that I mentioned was some of the tools that you should carry with you. So Andy goes on to say, on the way to work, the clamp holding the cable on my front derailleur worked itself loose, and the cable became loose. I had a multi-tool with me, but I couldn't actually tighten the bolt on the clamp because of where the clamp bolt was positioned relative to the down tube. The hex keys on the multi-tool just wouldn't fit into the bolt because the body of the multi-tool fouled the down tube. Since then, I've always carried a 4mm hex key as well as the multi-tool. That tool can get into the nooks and crannies and tighten up the clamp bolt easily. So, Andy's handy tip is that if you're relying on a multi-tool, make sure it has all the relevant size hex keys and that you can actually tighten up all of the bolts on your bike with it. In other words, test out your multi-tool before you go on a ride to make sure that it actually can reach and work all of the bolts on your bike. If not, figure out what size bolt is going to be inaccessible to your multi-tool and then pick up the small hex key that you can carry with you. Andy, I think that's a great tip, and I want to thank you for sending that along for the rest of the listeners. Next up, listener Scott wanted to let us know that there was a commentary that he thought that we would be interested in that was on CBC National News. He says, recently on the CBC National News, Tom Harrington completed an in-depth documentary about doping in cycling. He says, I know you must get tired of speaking about this. Yes, I do. And I occasionally get tired of hearing about it. Sorry about that, folks. But I thought this documentary was excellent. Though I couldn't locate a link for the video, he did include a link for the commentary, and I have put that link into the show notes. I also thought it was interesting. Recommend that you go and check it out. And finally, listener Wes wrote in to let me know that he and his family are planning a European cycling vacation this summer. And he's done a lot of research. He's thinking about going to France. And so far, they think that they've settled on going to the Pyrenees. He says the costs are relatively reasonable and the cycling is going to be a challenge, but they're not 100% committed yet. And they'd like to find out if any Fredcast listeners have cycled in France, and they could maybe come up with a top five list of cycling destinations in France. I think that's a great request. So, for those of you who have been fortunate enough to go cycling in Europe, send me an email. Better yet, I would love to get your audio comments on this so that I can play them on the show. Either call the Fredcast listener hotline, or if you've got the capability, record something on your computer and email it to me, or use that send an audio comment link on the right-hand side of the page. I moved it so it's a little bit more visible. And send an audio comment that I can play on the show. I would love next week to be able to give Wes a couple of tips from some Fredcast listeners about cycling in France. Well, that's almost going to do it for us for the evening. Just a couple of tips like I always bring you every week. Please continue to spread the word about the Fredcast. We love it when you vote for us on Podcast Alley. Of course, there's a link in the show notes as well as one on the left-hand side of the webpage. Tell your friends about us and tell three friends, or go on iTunes and write a review. A couple of great reviews on there. We appreciate that. Lots of great ways to stay in touch with the Fredcast. And as you've probably noticed, if you've sent me an email, I am finally digging out from under that huge pile that I've had sitting here on my computer. Have a few more to go, but please send us an email. Our email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Let me know what you want to hear on the Fredcast. Let me know what you like. Let me know what you don't like. Or just say hi. Or let me know about that century that you recently finished. I would love to hear from you. If you don't want to communicate with me, but you want to communicate with some other Fredcast listeners, check out the Fredcast forums. There's a link in the show notes to that. And as always, if you want to send us some audio comments, I just mentioned it a few moments ago, use our Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED, or send an audio comment by email, or use that send an audio comment link on the right-hand side of the webpage. Where's our webpage? www.thefredcast.com. Tonight's PodSafe cycling music comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. I thought that since we'd done all that holiday music, it might be nice to get a little warm weather music. And so tonight's music is called Morning on Haleakala Highway by Kimo Watanabe. It brings me back to Maui every time I hear it. And of course, there's a link in the show notes to where you can find more information on Kimo Watanabe on the PodSafe Music Network. That's going to do it for this evening. Thanks for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. And hopefully, thanks for dialing in to our live show this coming Wednesday night. Until then, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.